Across the country, a series of newly proposed state laws have the potential to limit the rights of young LGBTQ people. A dozen states are proposing bills that would ban transgender youth from participating in school sports and ban doctors from providing gender-related hormones and surgeries to minors, even if they have parental consent. If passed, these bans could have lasting psychological and medical implications for transgender minors living in those states. Joining me now is Chase Strangio, a transgender rights lawyer with the American Civil Liberties Union. Chase, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Who is leading this legislative push, and how would you characterize their motivations?
Yeah, I think for the past, 5 years, I would say we've seen a real systematic effort across the country to target transgender people in state legislatures. And it's a combination of local family policy institutes and then national groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom and Family Research Council that are sort of have an ideological mission to push, in my view at least, LGBTQ people out of public life. And not only that, encourage societal norms and policy practices that would force us to live, inauthentic ways. And so that has really been the impetus for these bills, and we've seen an uptick over the past several years.
So what's the kind of language they're using to rally support around this cause?
Yeah, when it comes to transgender youth who have been the primary target of so much anti-LGBTQ legislative action in the past 5 years, the supporters of these measures really talk about trans people and trans young people especially as somehow a threat to others, as if, allowing someone to go about their lives consistent with who they are, finally living their truth, is going to somehow harm the rights of others.
Let's start with the bills banning hormones and surgeries for minors. What states have these bills on the docket, and what types of hormones and surgeries would be banned?
So these bills actually are broader than that, and they would not only ban gender-affirming care for minors, which would include at times even mental health care, any affirmation of a young person's gender identity, but also hormone blockers and hormone therapy and surgery to the extent surgery is even available to minors. So we're seeing those bills in South Carolina, in Missouri, in South Dakota. And in some of those cases, in South Dakota, for example, the bill would actually make it a felony for a doctor to treat a transgender young person who is both consenting to, having their parents' support for, and having a medical need for treatment. So what we're seeing is every single person in this young person's life is saying this is absolutely 100% medically necessary, supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics, supported by every major medical association, and lawmakers suggesting that a doctor should go to prison for 10 years for keeping up that care for the young person.
Would any of these bills prevent trans minors who are already taking hormones from continuing to take them?
Yeah, and that's one of the most alarming things. If you can imagine, you're on this medical treatment that is saving your life. And so you can take a young person in South Dakota who's 17 years old, let's say, who has been on hormones for 3 years. If this bill passes, all of a sudden, that treatment is going to be cut off immediately, which is going to have such severe physical and mental health consequences that could lead to suicidality and possibly death. So we're really talking about lawmakers playing, with fire here. And the fire is the lives of young trans people in their state.
Republican South Dakota State Representative Fred Deutsch, who authored a bill in his state banning puberty blockers and surgery on minors, recently told the Christian Post that, quote, "We know from the literature that approximately 85% of children that are confused about whether or not they are a boy or a girl, that the confusion goes away naturally." Is there any substance to what he's saying?
Well, what he's doing is he's distorting information about young LGBTQ and gender nonconforming children in the service of a narrative about trans youth. So The statistics that he's referring to are about young kids who are gender nonconforming who often don't turn out to be trans later in life. Those children are not the ones who are diagnosed with gender dysphoria and receiving treatment. They're just, you know, young people who show, you know, gender atypical behaviors, which a lot of people do. And, you know, and some of those people, you know, end up having consistent and persistent cross-gender identification. For those young people, they may receive a diagnosis of gender dysphoria and receive treatment consistent with very well-established medical protocols. So Representative Deutsch, who I will add, has led the fight over the past several years, introducing bill after bill targeting trans young people, some having nothing to do with medical care, is essentially taking a statistic wholly unrelated to trans people to try to suggest that trans young people who have a very well-documented medical need for care should have that care cut off and criminalized.
One lawmaker in Utah, Brad Daw, told NBC News that his bill would allow puberty blockers, but that it prevents surgeries and hormone therapy. And he's quoted as saying, "We want to do what we think is reasonable practice, which is put off that kind of one-way ticket decision until the youth is an adult." Is there an argument to be made along the lines of what Daw is saying?
With respect to surgery, very few minors are receiving surgical treatment. And if they are, it's chest surgery for older adolescents, and only when it's being supported by the established medical protocols and the young person. Now, when it comes to this idea that we can't provide hormones or surgery because it's permanent, it's important to remember that there is nothing more permanent than childhood trauma leading to suicidality. We have an epidemic with young trans kids, you know, over 50% having suicidal ideation and over 41% of trans people having attempted suicide in their lifetime related to not being affirmed in their gender. So having hormone therapy, which, you know, does not have permanent traumatic impact, you know, denying that therapy could lead to permanent traumatic impact or even death. So we need to think about and question what we mean by what's permanent and how it's so important based on the data and the literature to actually affirm young people in their gender, including through medical interventions.
Chase Strangio is a transgender rights lawyer with the ACLU. Chase, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
We were just talking about a slew of recent bills that target trans youth. But while some conservative states are moving to curtail rights, others are expanding protections for members of the LGBTQ community. Last night, Utah became the latest state to provide protections against conversion therapy when the state's governor put a rule banning the practice into effect. Joining me now is Troy Williams, executive director of Equality Utah, an organization that worked closely with the Mormon Church and the state legislature on this initiative. Troy, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hey, it's great to be here, Arun.
So this rule banning conversion therapy is now in place. Walk us through exactly what's in the rule and how it's intended to work.
Yeah, well, the rule has the efficacy of law, and it provides that state-licensed mental health therapists who subject a minor to conversion therapy will have engaged in unprofessional conduct and then can be subjected to disciplinary proceedings by one of the state's mental health licensing boards.
What effect does this therapy have on young people?
Well, the data is pretty clear. When young people are subjected to conversion therapy, their rates of depression double and their attempts at suicide triple. And for us here in Utah, this is a critical issue. Suicide rates for young people have spiked 141% over the past decade. It's the leading cause of death for young people in Utah.
And I imagine that may be even worse for LGBTQ kids, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Now, Utah is a conservative state. How did this initiative get the support of Republicans like Governor Gary Herbert and the Mormon Church?
Yeah, you know, I think suicide is not a partisan issue, right? And so when we looked at the data and we brought the data and we brought the stories of conversion therapy survivors to the governor, to the leaders of the LDS Church, and when they shared their stories, hearts were moved, minds were opened. And when we know better, we do better. And when we heard the stories, the governor acted swiftly.
Was there pushback?
Oh, yeah. You know, you don't advance a measure like that without, you know, people challenging us. But that provided us an opportunity to share our stories. And when we brought we had a few public hearings on these issues. And oh, boy, conversion therapists crawled out of the 1980s and 90s to testify against our proposed rule.
Now, who were these groups who are opposed to ending conversion therapy?
Well, it's a familiar cast of characters. It's the Utah Eagle Forum. It's Family Watch International. Mm-hmm. It's folks who, as your previous guest alluded to, are focused on excluding LGBT people from public life.
Now, Troy, in states where conversion therapy is still allowed, if activists and lawmakers are looking at Utah for ways to pass rules like this, what advice do you have?
Well, Governor Herbert was really wise. He said that science should prevail over politics. He saw that this was a polarizing issue, and so he sent it to the Board of Psychologists who drafted the rules and regulations. So we applaud that. We want to keep young people healthy and alive. We want to make sure that they have an opportunity to thrive in every sphere and every facet of our society, because that's what's going to keep them healthy and happy.
My guest has been Troy Williams, Executive Director of Equality Utah. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.